This was not a big colorectal year, Neil. It was a pancreas gastric year, so I can do a gig on that as well. But in colorectal cancer, it was a year of consolidation, I think, more or less. I think it was a year of people actually taking what we learned in ASCO from 2002 to 2004 and putting it into practice, learning about how to apply the results of the MOSAIC trial, how to actually give FOLFOX in the adjuvant setting. I heard or saw data, for example, with bevacizumab in advanced disease and found in the U.S. at least that there's about an 80% market penetration. Bottom line is I think the American Oncologist is doing a wonderful job of selecting patients because my guess is based on the toxicity registry profile, the toxicity in the average patient in the community looks pretty much like trials. And that's a very important piece of data to have because sometimes trial patients are so extraordinarily selected that you worry whether you apply the drug to your patient, it's going to have the same toxicity profile you can quote from the Hurwitz trial, for example. What's important is that 20% probably represents the group that should not get the drug based on high risk of arteriothrombotic events, high risk of thrombosis, high risk of perforation, whatever. I think 80% might be the correct number.
Why don't we pick up on that? Because that certainly is a practical issue. It's now, really, it's only been 3 years since that Hurwitz presentation, hard to believe. And now the drug's being used extensively. There's an adjuvant Bev trial, CO8, that's almost closed. Three adjuvant Bev trials, but that one's almost closed. Where are we in terms of understanding toxicity? You mentioned the data from the community. Can you kind of sort of summarize where we are right now in terms of understanding the side effects and toxicity of bevacizumab?
I think as much as one can in a 3-year period of time. I think that the data from the Hurwitz trial, the toxicity profile is pretty much predictive of what one sees in practice. I have to say that I'm a little trepidatious about saying that because I use the drug fairly frequently with a large practice. It's been since February of 2004 that the drug has been available commercially, and I've not had a perforation, is there wood in the room, since that time. I don't think I've missed them, but in fact, the perforation rate is in, you know, maybe 1% or 2%. And frankly, if you go back over my other population of patients who before bevacizumab, I may have had 1% or 2% of people perforate because of risk responses to chemotherapy or to the disease itself before that. So the registry trials have shown toxicity profiles, as reported ASCO this year, very similar to that seen in the Hurwitz trial. So I think that's comforting for me as a practitioner to go to a patient and say, this isn't just a highly selected patient population. This is what might happen to you. Having said that, if someone is at high risk, I might not treat them for the benefit that was seen. I tell them about perforation. In clinical trials in which we use bevacizumab, we have a card that goes in their wallet saying, I'm on this drug, and if I'm in an emergency room and I have a belly ache, take a flat plate. I might perforate because I can't assume that a doc that knows how to deal with a pneumothorax after a car accident knows about bevacizumab and perforation. So we don't overemphasize it, but I think raising patient awareness and responsibility for taking the drug is important, as we would, for example, giving drugs with febrile neutropenia. If you have a temperature, go to the ER. If you have a bellyache that doesn't go away, it could be a perf.
You mentioned higher risk situations such as?
That's the problem. For perforation, we don't know.